Blog Talk Radio.
This episode is brought to you by the Brain Injury Association of America. The BIAA's mission is to advance awareness, research, treatment, and education, and to improve the quality of life for all people affected by brain injury. They are dedicated to increasing access to quality health care and raising awareness and understanding of brain injury. You can learn more at BIAA.org. The opinions stated in this podcast are my own and not necessarily the opinions of the Brain Injury Association. Hello, everyone. I am Amy Zellmer, and you are listening to the Faces of TBI podcast, a series created for survivors by survivors, raising awareness about traumatic brain injury, one podcast at a time. Those of you who might not know who I am a TBI survivor from a fall on the ice in the winter of 2014. I am also a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, and I volunteer on the Brain Injury Association of America's Advisory Council, and I recently released my first book, Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, Finding the Road Back to Normal. You can learn more about me, and you can learn more about upcoming podcasts at facesoftbi.com. Today, we are chatting with speech therapist Richard Dubose. Richard has 11 years of experience working directly with a primarily TBI population. Richard came about his calling to work with traumatic brain injury patients in a very personal way. During his junior year of college at the University of South Alabama, his father was in a car accident on the way to work and sustained a TBI. It is through this experience and his fascination with cognition and how the brain works that he became interested in treating adults and adolescents with TBI. First job out of college was working with the Brain Injury Program in Greenville, South Carolina, where he worked with patients in an inpatient and outpatient setting. He also spent a couple of years working in a skilled nursing facility, but found his way back into the rehabilitation setting in his current position at AdMed Rehabilitation Hospital, which is in the Health South Network. He's presented on topics of cognition, behavior, and brain games, and serves as a facilitator of the Anderson Ossini Pickens Brain Injury Support Group. Helping those who've acquired brain injuries has become a family affair as Richard's wife of 3 years, a physical therapist, shares his passion of helping this particular patient population. Health South is one of the nation's largest providers of post-acute healthcare services, offering both facility-based and home-based post-acute services in 34 states and Puerto Rico through its network of inpatient rehabilitation hospitals, home health, and hospice agencies. Health South can be found online at healthsouth.com. So Richard, welcome to the show. I am so happy to have you here today. Thank you for taking the time to talk with our listeners.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so Richard, what I would like for you to do is give our listeners, I know I just read your bio, but give our listeners a little bit more background about who you are and how you came to speech therapy.
Sure. When I went off to college, I knew I kind of wanted to be in a field of some sort to help people in some way. I wasn't quite sure. I pursued psychology a little bit and a few different avenues, and then I ended up taking some courses in speech-language pathology. And at one point, I thought I was headed towards working with kids with language disorders, and stuttering interested me quite a bit. And as you mentioned, I was in my junior year of college. The week after my sister had just gotten married, which was a big event for my dad, being the only daughter he has, and he was traveling to work in the morning just as normal, and another car was on the wrong side of the road or just taking a corner a little too wide and ran him off the road and into a tree, and I got a phone call and that dad had had a serious head injury and needed to come home. And And through that series of events, it's kind of shaped and molded me into working in the area of brain injury. Fortunately, my dad, you know, if we talk about terms of mild, moderate, and severe, we were very fortunate in the event that Dad's injury was mild per se. And I know, after reading some of your blog, mild is one of these words that, when you say it, it's the experience for people is certainly not mild. And the things that we went through and things that still go on to this day, he was able to get back to work and do a lot of the things that you would hope for coming through an injury like that. But behaviorally, personality-wise, and that sort of thing was and still is a different person. Only that people with who've experienced brain injury can kind of understand that, because you look at some folks and say, well, you know, are they really that different? They've always been a little bit this way and that way. And being in close family, you really get a better understanding of what people are going through. And so I ended up getting a job in Greenville, South Carolina. I was really that interested in working in the brain injury program that they had up there, and spent 11 years there, and found my wife, the physical therapist. We used to work together, and she's now the supervisor and manager there. So I tried to, as we were getting closer to marriage, I needed to look for somewhere else to work, because she was going to be my boss. So, that's, in a nutshell, that's how I ended up in working with brain injury.
Yeah, wow, what a journey to get you there. But, you know, your story is, I'm hearing more and more stories like this, how a loved one or themselves went through a traumatic brain injury, and that really drew them into the calling of working with TBI patients. You said something earlier, and I want to back up to it and kind of clarify a little bit, talking about mild, moderate, and severe. And I want to really clarify that those are medical terms, and those terms refer to loss of consciousness and cognitive impairment at the time of the injury. I know there's so much confusion around what those terms mean, and I'd kind of like to see those terms go away. Because, like in my case, a mild TBI refers to I was unconscious for less than 30 minutes. However, those terms have nothing to do with your symptoms and your recovery. And so I just kind of wanted to reiterate that point, because there's so much confusion around those, especially, you know, when a doctor's telling them you have a mild traumatic brain injury, and the patient's going, but no, I don't remember how to tie my shoes, you know, so they don't correlate with your symptoms. So I just kind of want to remind the listeners of that.
No,
because
I appreciate.
You could have a very mild TBI and have very severe symptoms, really, and vice versa. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that now, and concur with those sentiments as well. And oftentimes the milder per se, even outside of the medical context of how they use that word, the milder injuries are oftentimes have more of an impact. They're different. I mean, it's different and. Have a very significant impact on the individual because of the cognitive abilities of self-awareness and the ability to appreciate even at a greater detail the differences, the loss, the what's not working well, or what's, and that's a really tough, I would say, a tough population that's underserved in our communities.
I agree. You know, I just, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say it's misinformation out there, but the information is not presented well on what those terms mean. So I just, that's one of my missions, is to really make people, the lay person, understand. And a concussion is a form of a mild traumatic brain injury. And, mm-hmm. you know, just really reiterating that to people who maybe have never experienced themselves or a loved one that have gone through this. And so just really raising that awareness for outsiders, so to speak. So, Richard, today I have you on the show talking about patient advocacy. And, you know, you dealt with your father, you know, when he had his injury. And I look back at myself, and I didn't have an advocate with me. It was just me. I'm single. I live alone. I have elderly parents. And, you know, when I look back, I thought that I was doing okay back then, but I was really in such a bubble of fog and cognitive impairment that I didn't even know I should have an advocate with me. I remember going to the neurologist and getting frustrated because she wasn't believing me about some of my symptoms. Whereas if I'd had someone with me that could say, oh no, this Amy's not normally like this. Amy's doing this and this and this. I don't think this is normal. You know, I think that would have changed my interaction with my doctors. And also the fact that, like, I would have to write a list of my questions that I wanted to ask the doctor, because otherwise I wouldn't remember to ask them, and I would forget half of what they told me, you know. So even from that perspective of having an advocate with you.
That, you know, that is such an important part of, I think, anyone that's had a acquired brain injury in their recovery is typically going to interact with the medical community either on a small level or have a lot of interaction with that. And unfortunately, your story is a lot like other people's stories, and it's a lot like a lot of persons' experiences with the medical community when you go in with what seems to be a milder problem, and I just mean milder in the sense of I don't need to be in the hospital today. I'm not suffering some grave illness. And if it doesn't reach that threshold, oftentimes it feels like it falls on deaf ears, and then you have people that have had brain injuries who understandably have difficulty organizing their thoughts. They don't remember things. They don't report symptoms as well, or not able to remember that. They're not, certainly not as able to advocate. And, you know, difficult thing to do when you're interacting with doctors and nurses and deal with it on a daily basis here. And it's, you've got different parties. I work for an organization. I work for a hospital. All my coworkers are therapists and nurses and doctors, and yet I serve my patients as well. And I have to, you know, treat both of those groups with respect and advocate for both of those groups. And sometimes I find myself a little bit in the middle of that when I find it, you know, really important to step up and help a patient. Do like you were saying, write down what are my symptoms that are going on, and to notify other people that these problems reach a threshold that we need to investigate a little bit more, you know, that whether, you know, during their recovery they're having symptoms of an infection or other kinds of things that are ongoing that certainly happen and that sometimes fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and I recently spoke at a support group, and there was two new people. It was her first time visiting the group, and she had fallen off of a bike and hit her head on the cement. She didn't lose consciousness, and they thought she was okay. She got up. They biked back home, and the next day her boss was like, "You're not okay. what's going on with you? And she told him, you know, she had fallen off her bike. And he's like, I'm taking you to the emergency room. Because he observed that she wasn't her normal self. Like, she was saying weird things and her words weren't coming out right. Mm. So he took her to the emergency room, and it was her fiance that she had been with. And he was like, but she was fine. She got up and we rode back home, you know. And that's somewhat common for something like that to happen and for those symptoms to take 24 hours to onset. And so she had been going to the doctor, and she was now, like, I think 6 months out from her bike accident. And she was still having trouble, and he was really, really frustrated. So we were very happy that they both came to this group together. And he was really, really frustrated what was going on, that she wasn't recovering quicker and all this. And we're like, and these two are probably in their mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And we encouraged him to go to her doctor's appointment, because she would come home. He'd be like, what did you talk about? She's like, I don't know. And so he wasn't getting any good information. And we encouraged him, go to the doctor's appointments with her, like, and keep coming to the support group together. I remember when I fell, and we think I probably lost consciousness for a few minutes, but we'll never know because no one witnessed it except my dog. and right, she's not talking. And so there was a lot of people that were just like, oh my God, you just have a concussion. No big deal. Like, why are you still complaining about this 6 months later? And it was like, I'm just over 2 years out, and I'm still dealing with some of the consequences. And, you know, I think those loved ones who've never dealt with something before, or maybe they had a mild concussion playing football in high school and they recovered from it quickly. It's frustrating, and it's frustrating for the survivor too, because they're legitimately dealing with these issues and their loved one isn't supporting them because they don't believe them. And so I think, you know, that's where it's so critical for that caregiver or that supporter to go with the patient and help advocate in that way. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It's a complicated kind of thing that, as far as the dynamics of relationships between family members, husbands and wives and spouses, and what is really going on there when these kind of events happen and things aren't the same and how we cope with it. And it's not simply that, you know, a lot of spouses are in denial, but I think how we motivate ourselves sometimes is how we try to motivate other people, and it's not always what they need. I think it's a mistake sometimes if the way you motivate yourself is like, well, let's tough it out, you know, just forget about it
right,
and just go on with life. That doesn't really work a lot of times with brain injury or post-concussive syndrome, and at the first step, I mean, we need a realization of this is real, this is a problem, this is not just depression, some just isolated, you know, it's not a moment of, oftentimes people will just feel like it's, somebody's gotten lazy even.
Right.
My director where I used to work, he was a neuropsychologist and is a neuropsychologist and was pretty strict about how we use the word motivation in speaking about our patients, and how we would, being very careful as far as what we attribute it to. You know, if I see the person not following through with their homework on something, is that because they're lazy, or is it because they have trouble remembering? Or is it because they have difficulty understanding what's the importance of this worksheet? You know, for a lot of people, it's like, well, this is school. What does that have to do with my recovery? Which I totally get now. Just being very careful on how we try to assess someone's motivation or where they are. And I think it's just important with everybody. that we deal with and work with that we really hold out on some of those judgments of that this that knee-jerk judgment that often happens when you see someone
yeah.
that's not getting back up and getting, you know, able to engage in life, and we say, oh, okay, I've been wrong so many times with that, and that I try not to go there.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, if you've never experienced it, whether on your own or having a loved one, it is hard to understand what we're going through. And, you know, it is critical to not put pressure on that person. Like, oh, come on, just, you know, deal with it, tough it out. I know I certainly couldn't tough it out back, you know, in the beginning. I'd say those first 10 months were just so challenging for me, you know, that neuro fatigue, like, I would sleep 12 hours at night and take a 3-hour nap every day. I mean, it's just, I had no energy to get anything
yep.
done. And people just thought I was being lazy. And it's like, no, you really don't understand what I'm going through. So yes, not.
That's
not
your brain. Yeah. Your brain was recovering.
Yes.
You know, you were recovering
needed.
And
yes.
And it's you know, one of the most important restorative processes for the brain is sleep. And so understandably, when
yeah.
people have brain injuries, they sleep more. My dad did, and it just, for us, it was bizarre. It was like, why is Dad sleeping in the middle of the day for 3 hours a day? And I didn't really understand it at the time. And
yeah,
you know, he did go through a period of depression, but it wasn't just simply that. It was, you know, depression related to the brain injury and the reactions of what was going
yes.
on, the loss
yeah.
that was going on, and as well as neurologically what had been affected. He didn't have the energy. And this is a guy who used to run 5 miles a day and was
yeah.
extremely active. That was tough to see. And looking back on it in hindsight, I had some things kind of misunderstood at the time. I was 20
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
still trying to
you didn't
to
know
cope.
Any better. You know,
no.
you'd never dealt with it.
No. We had a psychologist
right.
that came in and had one consult, and that was it. And they said, you know, do this, don't do this, don't argue, and don't try to reason with your dad. And the first thing I did was to try to, anything that came up, I tried to reason with them. My stepmother was like, Richard.
It didn't work, did it?
No. Oh, boy.
You know, yeah, and thank you for making that point that fatigue is because your brain is trying to heal. It needs that rest in order to recover itself. And I also want to address the issue with advocacy. If you feel like you're not getting heard or getting the help that you need from your current doctor, I remember when I was going to my neurologist, I was having I still have a lot of short-term memory problems, but I was having severe memory problems and word problems, not the aphasia, not being able to come up with the word or saying a completely wrong word would come out of my mouth. And she was just like, oh, let's just give it some time. And when I look back, I know I should have gotten into some form of cognitive or speech therapy back then to try and expedite that healing and rewiring that brain. So, you know, again, I didn't have an advocate with me and I didn't know enough to be a bigger voice and kind of demand more from my doctor. So, or even just finding a different doctor. I mean, I could have done that and it just didn't even like occur to me that I should do that. So how would you suggest people handle that if they feel that their doctor's not listening to them or that they think they need more than what their doctor's giving them? How do you suggest people and loved ones can help deal with that?
That's a good question and a tough issue. I tend
yeah.
to recommend that people try to, before, you know, let's say, making a rash decision, and usually it's not, but sometimes we just have a bad experience and with a doctor or doctor staff, and it's then we want to immediately go change. But if these things build up over time, like you're saying, and you're just not feeling like you're getting the services that you need, I think if we're speaking of just cognitive issues, you know, if you had the knowledge of, oh, do I request to have a neuropsychological evaluation? You know, most people, that's a mouthful to say, and most people have never heard of that. You know, where do I go for that? And that sort of thing. But those are things that are, I think, that are important for persons to get some, especially with what you were going through or other persons, to get an idea of where am I right now. And those are sometimes the things that fill in the gaps of where a brain imaging study doesn't really give useful information about someone's function.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, a brain imaging studies for most concussions are unremarkable. Yet, people still
exactly.
have difficulty. And I think everybody's different.
Yeah.
I don't know that everybody. I had a close friend of my wife's who's an attorney and had a concussion. He had had several concussions when he played football, and hardworking guy and works out every day and all this kind of stuff, and had a concussion water skiing and had just a tremendous amount of difficulty about to recovering from that. And it was a year long, even greater. And I think there's still some residual difficulties that he has to this day. And the advice that was given at the time was rest, and there's a little different. The advice now is a little different than that. We're finding these things out that, oh, well, maybe it's, you know, not rest, it's a balance of things, which would be understandable. But it wasn't until he started to get back into exercise that he started to feel a little bit better. He still has difficulties, but for him, we spent a lot of time trying to get him connected with a doctor who is experienced with concussion too. And I think finding those things out is very difficult to do. Just going on the internet, you really can't find, you know, okay, who's the doctor do I go to for this? Who's the one that's going to be the best fit for me? I think the support groups are a great place to start too, because, you know, if you have a local support group, you've got a dozen people there who've been through to bunches and bunches and bunches of doctors, and they can tell you, you know, their experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah, unfiltered. Yes, it's not, you know. So.
And you know, no two concussions are the same. No two brain injuries are the same. No two recoveries are the same. And so it is. It's very frustrating to the doctors, I'm sure, you know, as well as to the patient. So, yeah, it is. It's a balance. And we are just about out of time, Richard.
Okay.
We have just about a minute left here. But thank you so much for being here. This is really great information, super useful to patients, givers alike. So thank you so much for being here today and sharing your knowledge with our listener.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed the show. Be sure to visit facesofcbi.com to listen to previous podcasts and topics that we have lined up. And you can also be on Twitter and Instagram at Amy Zellmer and Faces of TBI on Facebook. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for being a part of my journey. Have a great day, everyone.